Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
Welcome to Trending. This week we are missing my other half today. That is Don Johnson. Unfortunately, he has been plagued with this flu that has been attacking everyone since Christmas time. I understand one of his kids has been in bed for a couple of days now. Poor girl. In the meantime, it is Timory here in studio. Great to be with you guys. And we have a full show with all of the women's marches that have been taking place across the country. And, you know, it's funny, I mention it first because that is how it is often being covered in the media right now. You know, we've had 45 years of pro-life marches and rallies across the country, some of the biggest events and marches that this nation has ever seen that are commonly not covered by news media. And, of course, women's marches, which took off last year, are getting more coverage, and we will talk about that a little bit later in the show. In the meantime, this weekend, Don was at One Life LA in Los Angeles. He was there broadcasting live for Relevant Radio. I know he has some great stories to share, hopefully when he gets back to us this coming week. In the meantime, I was at the Walk for Life in San Diego. I was there as the MC. So excited to be there. You know, it's amazing seeing, you know, just little moments where you have an opportunity to serve and work within a community. I was blessed to work on the board that helped bring Walk for Life to San Diego and be on the planning committee about 6 years ago. And this is their sixth Walk for Life that took place this year. I remember I was at the end of college as we were planning the very first Walk for Life. And here we are in San Diego, the sixth one. And, you know, a really neat story that I was sharing a little bit about with Don because I wanted to cover. So one of the speakers that I introduced at the Walk for Life was Sarah Jensen. And Sarah Jensen is a woman who works for the adoption services for the County of San Diego. And so anytime any of the crisis pregnancy centers have a adoption that needs to take place, maybe a woman who's interested in placing her child for adoption, she's the woman that everyone calls. And she has grown very close to the pro-life community, working on many of the boards in San Diego. Well, as I was introducing her, it was fascinating because I ended up sharing a story, one of the only really personal stories that I shared that day as MC, just trying to keep the day moving. And that was of a young, a woman who I had known who had gone through the adoption process. How I got to know her, and this is the reason I was sharing the story, was that we are called to be pro-life in every area of our life. And God willing, those we interact with and know that you and I are pro-life. Whether we're interacting face-to-face with them, they just know by the way we live our lives. Not necessarily that we're just talking about abortion all of the time, right? And so this woman, first time getting my hair cut with her, maybe the second time, and she ends up, you know, chit-chatting, gets a little bit of an idea of what I do, and is kind of acting a little interesting as I'm leaving. And she ends up saying, hey, you know, kind of awkwardly, can I talk to you outside? And, you know, here's my hairdresser asking to speak with me outside. I'm thinking, what on earth is going on? So I step outside, and she ends up sharing with me, my hairdresser, that her daughter's pregnant in an unplanned pregnancy. She knows I do a lot in the pro-life movement and surrounding the topic of women who are in unplanned pregnancies. And she said, I would like to try to work with bringing my daughter to your crisis pregnancy center where you're working. Lo and behold, within a day or two, her daughter is at the crisis pregnancy center working with the counselors. And the story continues from there. And this woman has been my hairdresser for about 5 or 6 years now. And she is someone, you know, I'm often able to follow the journey of her daughter who ended up placing her child for adoption. Well, here I am. I introduce Sarah Jensen at the San Diego Walk for Life, and I introduce her mentioning part of this story. Well, she steps up there on stage, and there's this woman up there on stage with her that I keep just looking at and I'm blinking, and she has this young mom and her soon-to-be husband. So awesome news. This young mom who gave birth to a young child wasn't able to raise the child, so she placed the child for an open adoption. Well, her and her now fiancé are getting married soon. She's looking at entering into veterinarian school, and she's sharing the story. And my mind, wheels are turning. The story sounds so familiar. The young woman looks so familiar. Lo and behold, she's looking at me too from on stage, and she realizes, I recognize you. And I said, and I ask, are you Nada? Are you my hairdresser's daughter? And she said, yes. She had forgotten and didn't really realize how her mom had known me. But this is how it started, the process of her in an unplanned pregnancy coming to the Pro-Life Pregnancy Center and later ending up placing her child for an adoption. And it was incredible to see how this entire story took full circle. And it was such an blessing, I think, for me and for those there to be reminded that it doesn't matter whether you have a radio show or you're posting on social media. Those things are great, but sometimes it's just those daily encounters with people you know every day, whether it's the person, you know, at the grocery store where you're just visiting with for that moment, whether it's the person who cuts your hair now and again. Again, it wasn't someone I had really developed a relationship with at the time, that we are called to be pro-life in all areas of our life. And so it's interesting, as you know, this week hundreds of thousands of people are walking, marching across the country. You know, you had hundreds of thousands of people in Washington, D.C., with the very first video address by the president on the topic of life, standing there saying, you know, I am pro-life, and not just giving this speech, but talking about how important this issue is. Last year, we had a Vice President Pence, who was the very first sitting vice president to actually give a speech at the March for Life in D.C. And San Diego, we had around 5,000 in San Diego. You had thousands in Chicago and other places at local walks. And so here's the story that I end up sharing. And it was a reminder that, yes, we may be standing up for life today, but this is just a day where we're here in commemoration and solidarity with the lives that have been lost since the 45th anniversary of Roe versus Wade. And this is what today is. But so often I feel right now that we have become apathetic in the pro-life movement. We've hit a point in time where there are so many pro-life stories, very heartbreaking, heart-wrenching stories about lives that have been lost to abortion, men and women who have done courageous things choosing to place their children for adoption, heroes like David Dalyden, who went in for a 3-year undercover investigation exposing the selling of fetal baby body parts and the lack of transparency with the women, the mothers of these children, as they are signing away their children's lives. And, you know, I think of this, and we're reminded we are called to do more. We're called to do more than just stand and march for life in D.C. or San Diego or San Francisco. For anyone who hasn't maybe participated in an event, maybe you're on the western part of the country and you can join the San Francisco Walk for Life. That's this Saturday. Please, anyone who can, maybe you're there, invite your friends and join the event. So for anyone just joining us, this is Tim Ray. My co-host Don Johnson has been plagued with the flu this week. He was not able to make it. In the meantime, talking about some of the difficult questions, I'm also taking it for anyone on Facebook Live right now. I'm taking maybe difficult questions that you have just a tough time on the life issue answering. And one of the questions that just came in is, what do we do with all the babies that are frozen from in vitro fertilization? So this is an excellent question. I think that this is one where a lot of people maybe actually haven't thought that deeply into the issue. Well, in vitro fertilization, to begin with, is a creating human life, in some cases for the sake of experimentation, and in many cases for people who are struggling with infertility or maybe a little later along in their years and they're having a difficult time conceiving or continuing to maintain the pregnancy, maintain the baby through the full 9 months of gestation. And so this is a tough issue because the question itself, we have to step aside for a second and away from the fertility issue and focus on the fact that In vitro fertilization is the creation of human life, essentially. It is in a petri dish. It removes the act of total life-giving, self-giving love, the act of total self-gift in the sexual act, and reduces the dignity of a child's creation in that moment to not being a total gift of the husband and wife in an act of love. But how do we create a child through in vitro fertilization? Well, I'm sorry to be vulgar, but the man has to masturbate and the woman has to go through intense treatment in order for her body to produce not just one, but multiple eggs. They overly pump the woman's body with multiple hormones so that she, who normally a woman usually only produces one egg when she's fertile at one point in the month, but she pumps out multiple eggs. Now, this in and of itself is devastating to a woman's reproductive system. Sometimes it destroys for the future her ability to actually produce a egg that can be fertilized so that her and her spouse can then create human life down the road. So in vitro fertilization, what happens now is you have now created through the fertilization of the egg, through the man having masturbated, you have now created new human life in the earliest stages, an embryo, so a fertilized egg. You have a distinct human person with unique set of DNA. We know in that moment whether or not the child will be male and female, although we might not be able to extract exactly at that moment. What we know is based on the chromosomes, whether that child is going to have blonde, brown hair, blue eyes, green eyes. Some of the characteristics of the child's own personality are already perfectly present in that child's DNA at that moment. This is a distinct, new, and unrepeatable human life. And so now here is the question, what do we do with these babies from IVF? Because you have multiple children now in this moment who have been created in the earliest stages. So a person could choose to implant 6 of these embryos into the mother's womb or a surrogate. Again, that gets into a whole nother issue. Or at this point, we could choose to freeze some of the embryos. We're going to come back to this question right after these messages.
From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Dawn and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
Welcome back to Trending. This is Timmery here. My co-host Don Johnson was not able to join me today. Again, he is sick. Prayers for him and all of the awesome projects that he is currently working on, especially his documentary Unprotected, which will be coming out this summer right around the anniversary, one of the biggest anniversaries here of Humanae Vitae, which again is the church's fantastic teaching on human life. That if you have not read it, I really want to challenge you to pick up Humanae Vitae. It's one of the shorter of the church's encyclicals. I also have a full breakdown where I walk through Humanae Vitae on my website, timray.com. In the meantime, I am answering the question about what do we do with the babies that are frozen from in vitro fertilization. The first segment, I talked about, well, what is IVF? We've gotten to the point now where you have these frozen embryos, these babies in the earliest stages of human life. What do we do? A woman can choose. She now has, let's say, 6, 10, 12, maybe 3 embryos that now need to be implanted in her womb or frozen. So let's say the woman chooses to implant 6 of the embryos and freeze 4. The problem with the even deeper problem with IVF is that let's say 6 of those embryos are implanted in her womb. Let's say 2 of those embryos, 2 of these babies die and they are not able to continue growing for whatever reason it may be. And let's say now she only has 4. Let's say that she is able to maintain the pregnancy with 4 embryos, 4 babies in the earliest stages of life. And let's say she's about 2-3 months along now and she knows she just wanted one baby boy. Well, what happens is, or she just wanted one child, what happens is the other children are very commonly aborted. So we're talking about not only have we changed the dignity of the creation of that child, not only have we harmed the way that child was created through IVF and the impact that that has had now on the woman's body. Is so sad of an impact. That's something that we're not talking enough about. And you can check out in some of the earlier trending episodes where we actually go into detail on what happens through an IVF and what happens to the woman's body. So here we have the option that some of these babies are aborted. But here's the other thing. There are thousands upon thousands upon thousands. I don't know what that number is, but there are thousands of babies frozen in the earliest stages of human life that are at this point could be implanted into a mother's womb to possibly grow to life. But here's what does the church have to say? Well, this is a question that the church has come through and has said there's truly no good situation, essentially, for how to address this issue at this point. What has happened is we have done an improper thing in the way we have now created the human life. And now we have left that life vulnerable. And so essentially, you know, we can't just say, well, let's just adopt these babies that are in their earliest stages and implant them in women's wombs. There is an issue with that. That goes against the act of the creation of human life. That goes against, you know, the people who may consider aborting some of these children because, again, they maybe implant five and only want one child. So unfortunately, there's nothing that can be done for these babies. So part of the conversation is you could allow these lives to end naturally. That is that it would take extraordinary means to, we couldn't resuscitate an embryo in the earliest stages of life. Just like you, it's difficult for a baby that at 3 months is slowly going through the process of being miscarried, that's dying. They don't have the ability at this point in time to save a baby at 3 months necessarily, right? Or 2 months or a month and a half outside of the womb. And so naturally allowing these embryos to defrost will be one of the options, or continuing to keep these unborn babies frozen. And I know that is such a difficult question, but here's the problem. The problem began with having created these children in the improper way. And that's where the church has come in. It's something that's not often talked about. It is a very important and difficult question about human life. So a great question. If there needs to be any more clarification, feel free to ask, but great question. Right now, we are looking at some incredible opportunities to, I think, evangelize on the issue of human life. As I stated at the beginning of the show, we've had March for Life taking place across the country with the San Francisco Walk for Life, the biggest walk after the march, with hundreds of thousands of people this weekend in D.C. So now we have San Francisco Walk for Life taking place this weekend. You also saw the women's marches that this year focused quite a bit on votes. And it reminds me a lot of the suffragettes movement and the old language of votes for women. But unfortunately, right now, these votes that are being encouraged are votes that are in favor of the destruction of human life. Votes that do not recognize that there are differences between men and women. Votes that are saying that they are pro-woman, but they are not pro-woman when they are for the destruction of women in the womb. When they are okay with us supporting policies like the one child policy, which actually a praise report this last year, with the work of the present administration, we have seen the United States pull out of the population control and the funding that we have been participating in, you guys, in the one child policy in China through the population control efforts of being done at the United Nations. We're no longer supporting that. Not only that, we've seen that we as a country have not only stepped back into the Mexico City policy that was reinstated by this administration, but we saw that the Mexico City policy was expanded. So we're not just talking $9 million, you guys, that are being prevented from going overseas to foreign countries for the promotion of abortion. This is extremely important, and these are moments to be celebrated. And I bring this up because the Women's March was focused on votes. And today I look at the comparison and how they like to compare themselves to the suffragettes, right? And this idea of votes for women. But today, we, the pro-life movement, we are the movement that is pro-woman. We are the movement that says women deserve more than abortion. We are the movement that recognizes that abortion has destroyed families, has destroyed personal development for women. I know women to this day who had abortions many years ago who struggle with the impact that that had on their lives. Look at different campaigns like Silent No More, women who regret their abortion and want to share their story. And these are a testament to why we need to also be actively involved in the political system. Don't allow just the Women's March to be the march that is in favor of a voting. We have to continue to vote for people who are going to enact pro-life policies. Again, Mexico City policy, pulling out of the United Nations population control. We are no longer supporting that one-child policy in China. These are important things. And that's why showing up at a March for Life, showing up at whatever walk you may have participated in locally, is not enough. You know, we've seen over the last few years this just total embrace of the superhero world, of Marvel, of DC Comics, you know, Batman being remade over and over again. Still have to say Christian Bale's my favorite, you know, Ben Affleck, Batman, as there some people are calling him, just doesn't cut it for me, but I love Christian Bale. In the meantime, what I was looking at is how with these superheroes, studies have even shown that many people who wear these superhero shirts feel more confident. They feel stronger. They're more willing to walk into whatever they are facing. It's something about these superheroes and the courage and heroism or heroics that we see in them that in taking on that costume as a 5-year-old little boy and running around as Spider-Man, or as, you know, a grown adult wearing that Flash t-shirt, there's something special about that. In this last week, we saw heroes in the pro-life movement speaking at these marches. But here's the thing. We have to be willing to be people, ordinary people, living everyday lives in every profession, whether it's Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, talking about him and his fellow congressional representatives who are going to continue to do their march, but march in Congress. That's what he was talking about this weekend. We are doing our march, but we're marching in our professions, in our friendships, and in our families. And just like that story I started with at the beginning of the show, that is where we have to think. You know, whether you are with your hairdresser and you're talking about life, or you're in the bathroom of Chipotle, that's a whole nother story. You may hear people who are facing unplanned pregnancies, or maybe they're living a difficult situation for life. Maybe we need to talk about life choices and changing the current attitude and landscape that we're allowing ourselves to walk down. You know, I never would have thought I would be doing work in chastity education. But if we don't have chastity education in our culture right now, then the pro-life movement is not doing enough, because abortion is just a band-aid for the deeper issues, the deeper issue of women who are struggling as a result of broken homes, men and women struggling as a result of broken homes, sexual abuse, or whatever that might be. Abortion is just a symptom. And I saw this firsthand with the people who had come into the crisis pregnancy centers. They often did not want that abortion. We'll be right back on Trending.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. This is Trending with Dawn and Timmery on Relevant Radio. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit dawnjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
Timmery here on Trending. Dawn Johnson is out this week. He will be back in the seat next week. More for Facebook Live and Twitter Live for anyone joining us. In the meantime, it is Timmery here. A little bit more on the women's marches that have taken place across country this week. You know, I just keep thinking, here are the pro-lifers, hundreds of thousands of them for the 45th year in a row, marching with signs of positive joy, men and women sharing that they regretted their abortions, and they talk about lives of freedom moving forward and the forgiveness they have sought. And here are a bunch of women yelling this vulgar speech and wearing these hats, for a lack of better words, and this is a gentler word, but they're vagina hats essentially. And I am just looking at this and saying, which movement do we want to be a part of? There was an article covering the San Diego Walk for Life that I saw this week, and it was talking about how surprised they were, and it was a secular article, that there was so much joy and how this was different for the pro-life community, the anti-abortion community, right? And I just laughed. It's just that they saw the contrast this year between the women's marches and the pro-life marches. They saw the joy of the pro-life movement and the anger and the women's marches. And, you know, just those hats alone, like, are you intentionally trying to subject yourself to comments? Are you intentionally trying to get people to just refer to you and look at you as a body and that's it? You know, especially, I think it is so insensitive to every single person who has been sexually abused and who has spoken out this last year saying, me too, I have been abused. So now you're just going to wear a bunch of vagina hats on your head. It's just disrespectful to all women. There's nothing classy about it. Find something else to wear. How about something joyful? Just say pro-woman. You know, at least the pro-life movement, pro-woman is to be pro-life. And that's where this last year I've seen some interesting questions that people have had. In light of the women's marches, I've often heard people say, well, how can I talk to my friends who are passionately pro-woman but don't see that their pro-abortion views are damaging that mindset? That I too am pro-woman. I know so many women who say, I'm pro-woman. I would love to say I'm a feminist, but I feel uncomfortable because of what most people believe that being a feminist entails, much to the chagrin of a lot of people I know that hate it when I say I'm a feminist. But here's the deal. If we say we're not feminists, unfortunately, a lot of people think that that means that we're anti-woman. And we are pro-woman. The pro-woman movement, the suffragettes, and so many were pro-life. You look at examples like Susan B. Anthony and many others who were so clearly speaking up, not just for the fact that women needed to have their voice in public office, they needed to have their voice for the ability to vote, but women needed to be able to represent the experience of women and families that wasn't completely being covered when it was only men voting. And so that was part of why it was so important for women to be able to vote. So when we look at this, we do share something in common with our fellow friends who say that they're feminists and they're pro-woman. We too are pro-woman, and we need to be willing to sit down and have those conversations. You know, I think that just starting with saying, I'm a feminist too, can kind of wake some people up. Now, I'm at the point where it's just nauseating to hear the word feminism. It's just like, we talk a lot on Trending about how so many of the movies today always have female heroines, even to the point that Star Wars, movies like Ocean's 11 or the new Ocean's 9 or whatever it is, I am not seeing it. Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12, those were great movies. Why do they have to remake everything with a female lead, a female hero? It's like, it makes men feel like, are they ever enough? And this is where it's so frustrating. But the pro-woman movement, we can communicate that in being feminists, we recognize that women are so special and that there are differences between men and women, differences that can be acknowledged and respected. I always will say that some people have to stop for a second. It sounds so simple, but 2 + 2 = 4. There's a total equality. 2 + 2 = 4, as 1 + 3 = 4. They both equal 4, but in a different way. How they get to that point looks a little different. In the garden, God created Adam and Eve. In Genesis chapter 1, we read that he created Adam and Eve at the exact same time. Male and female, he created them. In case we caught our human anthropology, our biblical human anthropology wrong, he said, okay, I'm going to re-explain how we created the earth, the human person, in Genesis chapter 2. And yes, he creates Adam first in Genesis chapter 2, as he tells the story, as God works through the human authors to tell the story. And what happens is Adam recognizes that he is totally alone. He looks at all of creation and he sees, you know, the lion has a mate to continue to populate the earth. You know, the hippo, all of these different animals, every type of bird. He even looks and observes all of the plants of creation, and he sees that even the plants have the ability to continue to produce, to fertilize, and to grow, and to move their species forward. And Adam recognizes in that moment that he is totally alone in the garden. And it is God who says it is not good that man should be alone. So he creates Eve, a helpmate, someone to be with him. If we look at the language, a complementarity, two people to complement one another. Because imagine a world where there were only men. Or imagine a world, as I think some feminists would like, where there are only women. There would be something missing. And I think that we forget that differences aren't bad things. I think we like to attack what is different. That's why some people are even saying, well, I'm not going to wear these, for a lack of better words, and these are gentler words, vagina hats, right? Because that's not inclusive to women who have had sex changes or men who are transgender and wish they were women because they can't have those female parts. So some people, I think it was Michigan, the Women's March in Michigan, said that they're no longer using the vagina hats, as I will say here today. You know, it's just, you know, these differences are recognized on a basic level of anatomy, a basic level of the biochemical makeup of the woman. A woman's body has the ability to carry and even feed a child. A man's body doesn't have the ability to do that. A man can do many and other great things, but that's something that specifically a woman can do. And that's why women enter in and out of the workforce differently than men do. That also impacts the wage gap. The fact that women don't work sometimes for as long, and might I add, by choice so that they can raise their families, or by choice they work part-time. When you've been out of the workforce for 20 years and you enter back into your profession, do you think you are going to be at the same salary level as someone who has been working in that same profession for over 20 years with 20 years of experience? No, the salary that you have is going to be very different. And that's where you see men don't enter in and out of the workforce in that way. So as their wages continue to grow with time in the workforce, women come in and out. They take part-time jobs. They even choose jobs that historically and very clearly have a very different economic impact, that are a lower cost, basically allow for a lower sense of living if they are living on one income. Teachers don't make as much often, you know, especially if they're choosing to work in the private school realm. You know, private school teachers often don't make that much. So as we see Women's March, another couple things that have stood out over the last couple days trending on Twitter, this 7 in 10 hashtag, 7 in 10, that 7 in 10 women believe fully in rights for abortion. You know, most people who are pro-abortion actually do not believe that abortion should be legal past 3 months. And this is what's so interesting. So as they're touting, oh, everyone believes in abortion, 7 out of 10 people, that number is not consistent. This number is not just, it does not reflect what the true choice of where we are as a movement on the life issue, where we are as a human people. We are not as a pro-abortion as Planned Parenthood, NARAL, and some of the other groups would like to communicate. That 7 in 10 just isn't true. The current generations are some of the most pro-life generations we have ever seen. They have recognized that human life is something that matters. They have seen through DNA, science, they have seen through the chromosomes, they have seen through the biology, that human life from the beginning of fetal development is a special human person, is distinct. And this is where you then look at it and you say, what is going on? Why is it that people are trying to claim that 7 in 10 women are pro, or 7 in 10 people, not just women, are pro-abortion? This just isn't true. My generation recognizes that abortion is wrong. Unfortunately, what happens is people view abortion today as a necessary evil versus 30 years ago, people didn't fully understand, unfortunately, what abortion was. Although I believe naturally we have this natural understanding of what abortion is, I think that they were able to be removed in some ways from fetal development, from what we knew the impact of abortion was, versus people today have seen firsthand the devastation abortion brings to families, to women, to men, and to their futures. The difficulty in future relationships, the difficulties in bonding, the physical impact, the difficulty with getting pregnant later on, or maybe an obsession with getting pregnant again and having children right away, and, you know, trying to replace that life that has been lost. you know, this generation knows that abortion is not just some simple thing to be ignored. And that's why that 7 in 10 stat, that 7 in 10 people are pro-abortion, just doesn't hold up. Similarly, you know, there's another stat where they're saying, rise up for Roe, rise up for Roe and Roe versus Wade. Does anyone in the pro-abortion movement recognize that Roe is actually, her name, her real name is Norma McCorvey, and that she had her baby, she didn't have an abortion, and that child was placed for adoption? And not only that, but Norma McCorvey had a major conversion to the pro-life movement and the Catholic Church, and she died a hero for the pro-life movement just about a year ago.
From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Dawn and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
Welcome back. My co-host Don will be back with us next week. Lots of thoughts and prayers for him. In the meantime, since he is not here, go and check out his website, reversetherevolution.com, which has information about Unprotected. You can also find him at Don Johnson Ministries. Unprotected is a documentary that he is releasing this summer addressing the issues of the sexual revolution and the impact it has had on all of our lives. This week, we have seen a tremendous number of things taking place in conversation between the women's marches and the pro-life marches. And I mentioned the women's marches first, yes, to make your blood boil for just a second, but because that's the way the media has covered them. So be sure to share the episode of the show. It is a podcast as well. You can always go onto iTunes or iHeartRadio to share a link to this show, to maybe share with people who are, you know, on the cusp looking at the women's march and not recognizing that hundreds of thousands of people have walked over the last week. In the meantime, some of those accomplishments that we have seen in the pro-life movement have not been recognized enough because you have voted to put pro-life people in office over the last few years. We have had a major impact on pro-life, on the pro-life issue. Again, I mentioned the Mexico City policy preventing $9 million from going overseas to pay for the abortion movement, for abortions of children. Even if that just saved one life, it would be worth it. We've now, because of this current administration that you guys have helped to vote in, has now allowed for us removing the United States participation in the one child policy in China because we're no longer participating in the United Nations population control efforts. This is, again, awesome news. The last couple of shows, Don and I have been talking about population control. Some comments which have come from the royal family, Prince William, which you can listen to the last couple of shows to hear a little bit about what we've had to say about population control. But this is huge, you guys. Not to mention the fact that we saw Health and Human Services now has a new office just focused on religious liberty and trying to help implement religious liberty for healthcare workers working in the profession who don't want to participate in things such as abortion and hormonal contraception. Very important things. This allows for us to live out our Catholic life in the public arena. This allows us to be pro-life in our different jobs. And so this is where voting pro-life matters. This is where going to the marches and the walks for life, recognizing 45 years of the impact of Roe versus Wade, you guys, that's 60 million lives lost here in the United States. I don't even like mentioning that number because I don't think it's a number that you and I can grasp. But look at it this way. 1 in 3 children for most of those years were the number of children that are aborted. So maybe look at maybe children walking down the street or any classroom, right? You have 30 children right there in that room. Think about all the children who are missing. For every 3 children, for every 2 children, there are 10 missing. For 20 people, so that means 15 children are missing from that classroom in a classroom of 30. That is the impact of abortion on our culture. And that doesn't even look at the impact that it has had on women and men. Before we keep going, I would like to mention some of our awesome, awesome sponsors for the show. That is Radiant and Valiant Magazine. Radiant and Valiant Magazine are published by Our Sunday Visitor. You can find them there. If you just look up Our Sunday Visitor, you can go to radiant.osv.org or valiant.osv.org. Their magazines are magazines, one for young women and one for young men. And they are phenomenal. They look at the Catholic lifestyle. They look and tell inspiring stories of human life. They tell inspiring stories of relationships and living chaste lives. And they also look at personality types and how we can come to better understand ourselves based on the temperament we have and those characteristics, you know, good and bad qualities alike, and how we can work with them to grow. These magazines are beautiful. They are inspiring. And I think that it will bring a little bit more joy to the interaction you have, maybe when you're hanging out at home and have a minute to just pick up in a magazine and see the inspiring photos that come throughout in the stories of people's and their lives, short stories, prayers. I really want to recommend checking out Radiant and Valiant magazines here at Our Sunday Visitor. In the meantime, one of the things that I picked up this last week, I was walking through Barnes & Noble, and I picked up a book that was on sale up there, and I just sat down and was devouring this the story of Grace Kelly. Now, some of you probably know far more about her and her life, but as I was reading the story, what began to unfold was that Grace Kelly, Hollywood actress, you know, at the peak of Hollywood, in some of yours and mine favorite movies, you know, I think To Catch a Thief with Cary Grant. Love that movie. Or you also have, you know, White Christmas, among others. Wait, is she in White Christmas? I'm confusing her with another person. No, she's not in White Christmas, is she? Jimmy G. Jimmy G here is here on the soundboard helping me out since Don is away. But, you know, you look at Grace Kelly and you see this elegant woman. And what stood out, and this is so funny, but I opened the book and one of the first pictures that came up, I was looking at just how beautiful she was. And I noticed something, and this is such a random thing to notice, but that her eyebrows were kind of hairy. And I don't know how else to put this, but she didn't have these perfectly groomed eyebrows. She didn't have, you know, all of this makeup in her eyebrows, making them darker or whatever. I'm sure she probably had a little bit, but it was very natural looking. And it's so funny, because I was commenting to someone I was with. I said, her eyebrows aren't plucked. They're not really maintained, but they have this beautiful shape to them. And there was something beautiful to her. And it's such a random thing to notice, but you can't look at Grace Kelly and see is say that there isn't this beauty. And this is something that I think we've lost since, you know, the golden age of Hollywood and the beauty, the natural beauty that was portrayed in women. But as I was reading this biography about her, I was reading that she was one of those people a lot of people didn't really have hope in the sense that here she was, she shows up on the scene and she shows up in, you know, a loose cardigan, slacks or a big thick wool skirt, flats, and has her hair high up in a ponytail with big horn-rimmed glasses. And she's almost not that she was trying to hide behind these clothes, but she was just really comfortable in who she was, take her or leave her. And she was there trying out, auditioning for these different movies and television shows. And there was a beauty to her. Like, they recognized the simplicity in her. And for a long time, they didn't know what to do with Grace Kelly. Eventually, she ended up being picked up and she was worked with where she was at with her body. And she's known as one of the most beautiful actresses of that time. And I just loved that a lot of what was said about Grace Kelly was that what was so beautiful about her was her character, and that her character was something that always showed. She came from a family that really valued and emphasized basically that interior beauty. And as we look at the women's marches, as we look at the pro-life movement, what are we looking to for examples of women? And I look at Grace Kelly and I see someone from the little bit I've read about her that community recognized that she wasn't someone trying to, you know, give her body away in order to get a role that she wanted. She wasn't someone who was obsessed, and I'm sure she may have struggled at times with all the popularity she gained, but she wasn't someone that, you know, overly was obsessed with her own appearance and her own beauty. But take her or leave her, she showed up in, you know, these kind of very simple clothes, simple hairdo, And she continued to just take the United States and, I mean, all across the world by surprise and with total joy, because she was one of those Hollywood characters they didn't believe would make it. They didn't know what to do with. But then as I continued to read, and I didn't know this, she actually was a princess. She ended up being the princess consort of Monaco. She became the princess consort of Monaco, and she ended up marrying a prince, Prince Rainier, and she ends up having children who are now the reigning prince in Monaco today. And I just like look at it and think, this is amazing. Here is this woman who continued to not only be in the public eye, work, but then became a princess. And did I mention, I found this out later as I was kind of like enamored by her life, she was also Catholic. And it just makes me wonder, were these Catholic values instilled in her from a young age that she saw and had self-respect from a very early age, and that she was able to live in a industry that was dominated in many ways by men? She continued to be comfortable in herself, not change her appearance off stage. You know, she had this look on stage, but off stage, she was a very simple person. And when we talk about the pro-life movement, when we talk about the importance of standing for life, you guys, we're all called to be ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And I think that this is what I hope everyone takes away from these marches and walks, that there are people everywhere in every walk of life willing to stand up for the protection of the unborn.
From the studios of Relevant Radio, this has been Trending with Dawn and Timmery. Trending. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit dawnjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.